Devasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Those who are desirous of achieving complete perfection in life must submissively hear all topics that are connected with the transcendental activities and qualities of the Personality of Godhead, who acts wonderfully. The systematic hearing of the transcendental activities, qualities, and names of Lord Sri Krishna pushes one towards eternal life. Systematic hearing means knowing him gradually in truth and fact. And this knowing him in truth and fact means attaining eternal life, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Such transcendental, glorified activities of Lord Krishna are the prescribed remedy for counteracting the process of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are considered to be material awards for the conditioned living being. The culmination of such a perfectional stage of life is the goal of human life and the attainment of transcendental bliss. First, we should understand that in our current status as residents of the temporary material atmosphere, we are undergoing a process of birth, death, old age, and disease. We should look at ourselves as undergoing a process or in the midst of a process. When you wake up in the morning, if you have a mirror and you look into it, you should see an entity that is undergoing a process. What is that process? Change. These material changes mean suffering, dukkha, because we're attached to various states, various stages. And when these stages inevitably disappear, we become disturbed. Material life means a process. You're undergoing a process. Things are done to you. Now, nobody likes things they don't want done to them. The object of material consciousness, of course, as we all know, is to have the things you want done to you and don't have the things you don't want done to you. So, the whole question centers around what is being done to you? Because we are undergoing the process of material nature, birth, death, disease, and old age are being done to us. The first step in intelligence is to understand the fault, so to speak, of material existence. From the relative point of view, material existence has a fault. That is, you must undergo the process of fourfold miseries, birth, death, disease, and old age. Now, actually, from the absolute point of view, there's no fault. Everything is perfect. It is perfect that we undergo this process because gradually one of these births will wise up and end this process. So that's perfect. But from the relative point of view, there's a fault because we don't want these things to happen to us. Yet they happen. We have been traveling from so many bodies, between so many bodies, in so many species of life, on different planets, even in different universes. We are all expert travelers, not simply from London to Bangkok, or Paris to Bangkok, or Sydney or Perth to Bangkok, or Indonesia. We are expert travelers in going from one body to another. And what is the ticket? What is the ticket that takes us from one destination to another? Our karma, the reactions to our actions. And what is the price we pay for all this traveling from one body to another, one species to another, one planet to another, or one universe to another? What is the price we pay? All the things we've accumulated during the lifetime we leave behind us. Just like when you get on the bus, you leave your fare with the driver and get on the bus and go. Or you, more specifically, you buy a ticket from a travel agent, you leave your money there and get your, with your ticket to get on the bus. So you leave your wealth behind. That's your passage money. What is the passage money for the process of transmigration from one body to another? The passage money is whatever you accumulated during your life, whatever money, family, relations, friend relations, whatever material learning you've done, hobbies, inclinations, all these things are left behind as passage money as you journey to the other side. This process is constantly going on, birth, death, disease, and old age. The intelligent person wants to counteract this process. For every process, there's an antidote or counteraction. So Krishna consciousness means to find the process that will counteract the process of birth, death, disease, and old age. Actually, this is the goal of all spiritual paths. How to reduce suffering. How to get rid of the dukkha. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna certainly agrees with the dukkha analysis. He says, dukkha layam ashashvatam. This material world is temporary and miserable. Of course, we may object. Oh, it's not so bad. After all, I'm experiencing some nice things. My health is pretty good. I've got a pretty clear brain, if I say so myself. And I've got a lot of nice friends, and things aren't so bad. But we all know it's so temporary. At any moment it can change. Just like so many people in this room have told me experiences of close friends or loved ones who suddenly met with an unexpected end. Of course, everyone thinks, but that won't happen to me. I won't meet with an unexpected end because I'm a good person. Nature knows that. Nature understands that I've got some unique qualities the whole world can benefit from. The whole world may not recognize them yet, but I do have these unique qualities, and that's at least enough to keep me from dying prematurely. I've got something to do in this world, things I haven't achieved yet. So surely, I'll live quite a long time, and when I feel ready, then I'll die. We have this unconscious feeling. Of course, it never works out that way. Now, sometimes when you hear talks like this, you may say, oh, this is kind of negative, especially so early in the morning. You know, really, the sun isn't even up yet, and we're hearing all this stuff. Give the day a chance, you know. Well, actually, as we've said before, the truth is beautiful. You see, if you don't mind us saying, due to the propaganda of materialistic society, our conception of beauty has been totally flipped upside down. We think that the more you avoid the truth, the more beautiful things are. But actually, according to the standard of transcendentalists, don't be afraid of the truth. Embrace it. The truth is beautiful, not untruth. Untruth appears to be very nice. Just like a false lover who charms you with sweet words one night and then leaves you in the morning. That's the beauty of untruth. But the truth has eternal beauty. It's simply that we have to readjust our vision. There is beauty in the fact that there's birth, death, disease, and old age. This process is beautiful from the absolute point of view. Why is it beautiful? Because by undergoing that process, we rebellious entities give up our attempts to be defiant of the complete whole or go against the complete whole. We give up our attempts to find false loves in this temporary world. And that's the most beautiful thing. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does say this material world is temporary and miserable. And we may think, But I've got some pleasure. It can't be so bad. But you see, everything is relative. If you have no water and you're dying of thirst in the desert, if someone brings you a drop of water, you'll certainly have water. But is it enough to sustain you? Is it enough to change the status of your whole existence? No. But you do have water. You have a drop. But we require oceans of water. In other words, we require oceans of pleasure, not just a tiny drop. Just a tiny drop will drive us crazy. Better actually not to have any at all than just one drop. You can see everybody's gone mad just chasing one drop. But the living entity requires vast oceans of pleasure. Why? Because the living entity is actually inherently or naturally pleasure-seeking. But that pleasure that we're looking for is not found in this realm. It's found in another status of consciousness. When we say another realm, we're not simply speaking geographically. We're speaking about consciousness. Consciousness can turn heaven into hell and hell into heaven. So on the one hand, it seems kind of a down to start talking about the truthful reality of life before the sun comes up. On the other hand, it's very beautiful because it gives us a chance how to plan our day in the real way. Just like the sun is going to rise soon in the sky, similarly the sun of our spiritual lives should also rise. That is the extraordinary beauty and peace and love we are looking for. So all we are saying is, give the sun of our spiritual life a chance. Let it rise. It's so inhibited by social conditioning, social fears, conformity. That's a tough one, I know. Whether we like to admit it or not, we all have a streak of conformity in us. We all, to a certain extent, do what others do and take into account what others do, even though we don't like to admit it. Before the sun rises, if we can plan this day, how I can use every moment for the highest, ultimate, eternal benefit, that is the most extraordinary beauty. Just think about it. If before the sun comes up today, I can plan how to use every moment of this day for the most lasting benefit beyond the temporary phases of material existence, if I can use every moment for the ultimate good, how glorious that would be. And you can do that. You do have the power to desire that. And once you have this desire, then Krishna, the complete whole, provides you all facilities to fulfill that desire. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I'm equal to everyone. I don't have any favorites. But one who becomes inclined towards me, that person becomes especially dear. So doesn't make sense. On the one hand, Krishna says, I'm equal to everyone, I have no favorites. On the other hand, Krishna says, if someone becomes inclined towards me, then they become very dear to me. It's not contradictory, you see, because everyone has an equal chance to become inclined towards Krishna, the complete whole, and become especially dear to Krishna. Simply by hearing these talks from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, the name of this particular scripture, means the transcendentally beautiful presentation of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Just by hearing every morning, the dormant or the sleeping spiritual consciousness naturally starts to awaken. And real beauty begins to unfold before your eyes. And you also begin to understand the false beauty of material existence that so bewilders everybody. Even though you know what the ultimate end of material existence is, disease, old age, and death, there's still a false beauty that occupies the mind and fascinates it. So in this part of the world, especially in Thailand, you can study very nice religious philosophies which teach you that this material life is suffering and you should avoid suffering. But beyond that, there is the positive. Ah, that's what we're all waiting for, the positive. But you see, in order to appreciate the positive, you have to understand the negative. The two are there together. Just like, you know, the symbol for Taoism. The positive and negative, the yin and the yang, are together. You have to understand both. To clear away the... Just like, let's say you have a pond with... And the pond is kind of stagnant. And it's got a layer of scum on top. Similarly, our lives can become stagnant in spirituality because we haven't made any stir towards spiritual advancement. And therefore, we get a kind of scum over our lives. So we have to clear away that scum and start churning the water. That's what Krishna consciousness does. It's not simply negative. Negative is necessary to understand the illusion. But there's also the positive, the transcendentally sweet positive. That is Krishna. Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. Name, form, qualities, and pastimes. It's material. That's what we're trying to get away from. When you reduce all that stuff to zero, and everything just becomes one homogeneous whole, then there's peace. Get rid of this individuality that's caused me so much pain. Yes, you should get rid of the individuality that's caused you so much pain. What is that individuality that's caused you so much pain? It's the false self, the false ego, the false mind, the false intelligence. So get rid of all that. That self is non-existent, it's unreal. But beyond all that illusion, there is the pure self. And that is the deepest mystery of Krishna consciousness, the pure self. It's not very much talked about in other spiritual paths, but it's there. Some spiritual paths don't talk about the pure self at all because they're working so hard to get you out of this conception of the false self. Like Lord Buddha just said, don't even concern yourself about any real self. Just understand that the self is unreal. Take it from that way. Krishna consciousness is a little different in that, along with the negative, the mysteries of the positive are presented. But we have to be careful with these mysteries of the positive. We can think that the positive is just like the negative, and then we make a big mistake. Because we've had negative experiences in this world with individuality, personality, qualities, forms. We can make a mistake of just, well, in the positive realm, these things shouldn't exist. We can make the mistake of thinking that all the things related, all the things on the absolute plane of existence are, well, that looks like stuff I know about. Qualities, forms, sounds, names. I know all about that stuff. We got loads of that stuff in this world. How can that be spiritual? That's a big mistake. You see, this material realm is the perverted reflection of the spiritual realm. Just like you look on the shore of a river or a lake, you'll see that the trees are reflected on the lake upside down. So this material world is the upside-down reflection of the spiritual realm. In other words, everything is there, Everything in the spiritual world is there in the material world, but it's reflected upside down. It's screwed up. So the whole point is not to say there's no trees, there's no forest. The whole point is to turn everything right side up. There is individuality. There are qualities which are purely transcendental, purely spiritual. This is the greatest mystery. This is the greatest beauty secret. How to get entrance into this most secret mystical understanding? There is no better way than to begin the process of Krishna meditation. And if it's done under proper guidance, you will get experience of all these things. They won't simply be theory or mythology or belief. So let us understand what the real beauty is. Naturally, so many of you are sensitive enough to understand the faults of material existence. It's a question of whether we want to do something about it. So many of you are shrewd enough, clever enough to understand these things, but still one may feel trapped. But once you get a taste of the eternal beauty, then it's easy to resist the temporary beauty. You have to have a higher taste. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the embodied soul may try to restrict himself or herself from sense enjoyment, but it's not possible. Just see, the complete whole, the supreme infinite, is agreeing with you. It's not possible to restrict yourself from the relative pleasures and pains of this world. Why isn't it possible? Simply with the approach of negativity, it's not possible. Sooner or later, that you'll go back to your old ways. But if you get a higher taste, a taste of the eternal realm, the eternal beauty, then you'll easily let go of the lower. So that is why we stress the Krishna meditation, because negativity will not get you to the goal. Temporarily, it'll do some good. Just like if, let us say you know somebody who just has a bad habit of pounding their head against the wall day in and day out. All day long, all night long, pounding their head against the wall. And you understand that this is not very good for the head. But the person may think, well, I get kind of a pleasure by pounding my head against the wall. Some people actually, you may know some people who are masochists. They get pleasure out of feeling pain. It's like when I was in Copenhagen, the doorbell rang, and I answered the door, and it was members of the Danish Masochist Society. they were asking if you had anything to donate for their new headquarters. So I sat down and talked to them and asked them, I'm sorry, I know too much about you. So I asked them, what is the purpose of your movement? And they explained that, you know, actually, there are different ways to be happy, and some people actually feel legitimate happiness through pain. And they shouldn't be discriminated against. Society should allow all possibilities. They were serious. I mean, they were, I don't think they were looking weird or anything like that. They were regular, like, you know, adults, you know, working adults, dressed regularly and look like normal Joe straight citizens. And they explain it. We feel happy when we're tortured. They said it with a straight face. We get our happiness when someone's treating us bad. So the purpose of our masochist society is we want to find friends and lovers who will give us pain. And how do we find the pleasure? And they said it with a straight face. And of course, I could not laugh because, as Miss Denmark knows, if you give a judgmental reaction, that's very bad in Denmark. You have to appreciate how everybody is getting pleasure. The point is, they're getting pleasure. So I just kept a straight face and... I see. So they explained to me that, you know, someone who's a masochist, they need friends and romance partners like anyone else, but they need a particular kind of friend and romance partner. So therefore they have their mailing list, and you can sign up, and they have a matching service, and they'll match you with somebody who can really give you pain. So, what can I say? I said, wow, the mature world is full of everything. Some or other people try hard to squeeze something out of this world. So, we have to know what real pleasure is. That requires just an investment of our time and energy. After all, we have to use our intelligence and look at what we're doing. Am I doing things really that much different from what everybody else is doing? I mean, let me get honest with myself. I mean, I know I'm a unique individual. I know I'm special. Everybody knows they're special. I know I'm real cool in my own kind of way. But am I really doing anything that much different from everybody else? And since I'm really not doing anything that much different from everybody else, won't I probably get the same result that so many have gotten before me? My parents, my grandparents, the older people in my town. Will I be going down their road too? And getting the same destination? And why not? I mean, I'm really not that much different. When you start thinking like that, then you get a kind of sick feeling in your stomach. Don't look at me like that, Greg. But after you get the sick feeling in your stomach, then you take a deep breath, and then immediately you'll start to perceive what's really meant to go on in life. Yes, the sweet transcendental sound of Krishna is so wonderful. It will arouse your dormant, sleeping spiritual pleasure instincts. It will arouse your eternal pleasure capacity and connect you with the supreme source of all pleasure, Krishna. That is the purpose of the human form of life. Krishna, that is the complete whole, the supreme infinite. Perhaps you have another sound you like better to refer to the complete whole, the infinite. Perhaps you like Allah, Jehovah. That's all right. We like Krishna. Krishna is a special sound. What actually does Krishna specifically refer to? It specifically refers to the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure. You didn't know that's what we were really into here, huh? So we just got up early in the morning because, what, we were masochists or something? No! We're into infinite pleasure here. This is how I lasted in Denmark so many years, talking like this, and everybody, oh, really? Okay, now your movement makes sense. And it does make sense. We are into infinite pleasure. Yes, these monks and nuns you see walking around, you know, not doing all the things everybody else does, and sometimes you may feel a little sorry for them. Come on, guys. I mean, okay, you want to be holy, but, you know, have a night out in the town every once in a while, you know, just to diversify. A little variety won't hurt you every once in a while, you know. A few nights on Koh Phangan or something, you know. Have a fling, you know. Just be flexible. Keep yourself a little loose. You don't want to get too tight.
the better you perform your meditation on the Maha Mantra, the Krishna sound, the better your activities will be connected to the Supreme during the rest of the day. Your activities during the day and the meditation on the Maha Mantra are like, so to speak, two sides of the same coin. They complement one another. The more selfless your activities are during the day, in other words, the more they're meant for the pleasure of the complete whole, the easier it will be for you to perform Krishna meditation. And the better you perform your meditation on the Maha Mantra, the more your activities during the day will be connected to the Supreme. It's a holistic program for spiritual jubilation.
So while performing the activities during the day, is it good or is it necessary or is it beneficial to also try and concentrate your mind on the spiritual sound?
The activity, when done properly, just like cooking for Krishna, that's non-different from the spiritual sound of Krishna, if it's done properly. What's that? The act in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, in all activities, be conscious of me. What is that verse, 18th chapter? Yes. In such devotion, in your devotional activities, be fully conscious of Krishna. And in the purport, Swami Prabhupada explains, being fully conscious of Krishna means, while you're doing your various activities during the day, constantly remember, who am I doing it for? Don't just do it whimsically. Be mindful. Who am I doing this for? I'm doing it for Krishna, the complete whole. Let me do it to the best of my ability, for His pleasure, for the pleasure of the complete whole. That is the consciousness of one properly performing his activities during the day. One who is mindful of Krishna, executing one's activities for the pleasure of Krishna, the complete whole. And that same purport, Prabhupada said, you shouldn't do something whimsically and then offer it to Krishna. Whimsically means you're not concentrating, not thinking about who you're doing it for and why. Any other questions?